Okay, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for being here. As he said, my name is Jessica Chitwick, and I'm from the University of Arkansas. I work for Dr. Anyang Shi. I'm a master's student in his lab, and although he couldn't be here, I really wanted to thank him. He's the reason that I could even come to this conference this year, so I'm really grateful to be here. So my first question for you all is, how many of you like spinach? Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that. That's great. Then you are among a growing population of Americans and people globally who also like spinach. It's valued to be over $200 million since 2009. Fresh market spinach is growing in importance because of salads and things you can put it in your wraps and things like that. It has a higher nutrition quality than things like lettuce, and it tastes great. And then, of course, traditionally it was used for freezing and for canning. Remember Popeye? I don't know if anybody remember Popeye the Sailor Man. He's actually the mascot of my hometown, which was Alma and the self-proclaimed spinach capital of the world, so that's where I'm from. And it's also a cool season crop. How many of you have grown spinach before? A couple. Excellent. So you probably notice it has a rather specific growing season, right? Early spring or even into the fall. But usually during the summer, like right about now, it would not be doing very well, correct? That's because it's a cool season crop. So how does this affect spinach worldwide, right? Well, at the University of Arkansas, we have a spinach breeding program. It has been in existence for over 70 years, so that's really, really interesting. And one thing we were interested in breeding for is heat tolerance. Why would this be important, you ask? Well, what if we could grow spinach worldwide all year round? What if we could grow it in greenhouse conditions or even in the field year round? Currently, it's being produced mostly in California and in Texas, and primarily in the off-season months of when other vegetables like tomatoes might be going. So if we could incorporate higher temperature times that we could grow spinach, then that would help everyone out. So I decided to explore heat tolerance and how we could help the breeding program find heat tolerance in our spinach lines, and I decided to start with seed germination testing. I used 9 different genotypes, and I tested them at 6 temperatures, which ranged from 10 degrees to 35 degrees Celsius. And I used the method that I used was the protocol determined by the Association of Official Seed Analysts. So you can see here, I have them in petri dishes, and I used 2 pieces of blotter paper moistened with 2 milliliters of water, which was very little bit. And I can tell you all about seed sterilization if anybody needs to know. I've done a lot of that as well. And then I tested them at these different temperatures for 21 days, taking germination counts. As soon as I had seen about 1 millimeter of radicle protrude, then that was considered a germinated seed. And so from here are some of my results. I'm going to start by looking at the graph over on your left. It says the 6 temperatures. And you can see there was a nice looking bell curve, right, which was kind of what we were looking for. We expected lower germination towards the end and higher germination towards 20 degrees Celsius, which was determined to be the optimum in previous literature. And my results also reflected that. But something really interesting happened between 30 and 35 degrees Celsius. Let's see if I have a pointer. Right about here. So you can see most lines dropped off pretty drastically, except for this green line, which was Ozarka 2. Ozarka 2 is a line that was developed at the University of Arkansas, and so that held quite a bit of promise for us. For one thing, that there was variation in heat tolerance, and so that this trait could exist in the germplasm. If our stuff has it, then I know it's out there. And so, again, looking at the drop-off between 30 and 35, I was interested in, well, what exactly is happening in there? So I added a temperature, which is over here, and I added this 32 degrees Celsius to get a little bit more of a spread, to show a little bit more of what's going on in there. And here you can see the different percentages. These are percentages of the cultivars on this side across the different temperatures, and the best percentage for each temperature is highlighted in red, and I really thought this one was interesting. That Ozarka 2 up there maintaining 63% its germination, which was high and above everyone else, the nearest being 27%. So that held some great promise for us. So the next question really was, how does this relate then? How can we use this in our breeding? Well, does the seed germination testing also reflect whole plant growth? In other words, do they just germinate well at that temperature, or do they also then grow well at that temperature, and is germination indicative of being heat tolerant in its growth? So I decided to use this 32 degrees right here as my test, as my testing temperature, because I was looking for the spread. I was looking for something that had, that there were cultivars that did really well, and there were some that did not do very well. That's what I was looking for. And then I used 20 degrees as my control. So moving on to my whole plant test, this is really what I was wanting to know, was what is that relationship between germination and growth, and can I predict growth from the germination? I used a complete randomized block design. You can see I have three blocks with six individuals for each cultivar across there. So you can kind of see that this tray would fit nicely into this right here. And I actually had two trays because these were being done in a growth chamber, so I controlled for variation in the growth chamber by having a tray on top and a tray on bottom. So I actually had, you know, essentially six blocks per run, and with, or you could look at it like two trays with three blocks each. And this was the growth chamber that I used. And I started out, because I wasn't wanting to test, I'd already tested germination. I germinated them, I allowed 14 days for germination at 20 degrees Celsius, which was the optimum. In this growth chamber right here, it's a Percival, it's really nice. And then you can see like they come up about like that. Allowing it, typically they were germinating in 7 days, but if allowing that extra week for growth got them up to a place where I could thin them down to one plant per cell, because that was my goal, and so that's what happened. Then, after 2 weeks, which would have been day 14, they were either held at the 20 degrees Celsius for the control, or they were transferred to the 32 degrees, which was my experimental test. And so here you can see on day 14, they look all nice and happy, and then on day 35, you can tell they're starting to yellow a little bit. And so day 35 is the last, so they were kept at the growth. They were allowed to grow for 21 additional days. And then I harvested them, and I took the leaf area and dry weight of the biomass. This is not exactly what I used, but this is a picture of it. And if anybody has ever used one of these, and you know it took me a really long time. And so actually that data was just wrapped up before I headed down here, and so I haven't had a chance to analyze it yet. But I'm really excited about it. From the leaf area data, it really looks like it's going to reflect the germination have predicted the growth. So I'm pretty excited by that. So in conclusion, temperature did affect germination. I definitely saw that there was an effect there. And it also affected growth. You know, whether it lines up perfectly with the germination data or not, it definitely, the heat stress group did a lot worse than the control group. And so that was what I was hoping for. So I think that we can move forward from here and breed for heat tolerance. I definitely think that there is the genetic variation out there for that trait, which is absolutely necessary, and maybe we can use germination as the screening tool in the breeding program. Thank you. Okay, so the question was, did I do any treatments prior to the germination testing? The only thing that I did was seed surface sterilization, mostly because the seeds that we used were also from our department, and they had been stored. I mean, they weren't cleaned like commercial seeds would might have been, and so I was getting a lot of mold, and I ruined a whole bunch of trees that way. So that was the primary treatment that they got, was seed surface sterilization. Yes?
Were there any differences in like the ages?
Not that I can tell, which is absolutely crazy, because not all of the accessions and the lines that I used are that I put up here, but it was crazy. Some of the stuff from 2003 still germinated right up there with the best of them. So it stores for a really long time. Anybody else? Yes? Okay, so I ruined several other replications. He's talking about, the question was, what was the watering schedule like? And that was really important for me to figure out. Unfortunately, trial by error, I ruined two replications that way because I overwatered. Spinach requires very little water, and so I was originally using trays that had holes in the bottom, and I was watering from the bottom, but that was too much for them. So instead, what I did was I used about about a cup of water per tray every other day. And then, of course, that changed in the 32 degrees Celsius because it was hotter. And so I tried to just make sure that I wasn't overwatering, but none of them were drying out. And so a lot of it was by sight and by eyes, because they just didn't use water equally. Okay. Thank you.